You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Welcome back.
You can't touch this.
It's The Drive with Matthew, Jimmy, and Chuck. ESPN Sports Radio, 1300 and 92.5. We're brought to you by Dan Cummins of Parish of Georgetown.
Well, this is a great song because our next guest, who we like to call Mr. Perfect, and we're not the only ones. There are only been, we think, 12 of these. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Perfect games?
No, up
till Tom.
He did his, yeah.
Yeah.
23 now.
23 now. Up till Tom's,
right.
There had only been, he was the, I think, well, let's say hello to him, and we'll explain why.
He probably knows.
We're always happy to talk to Tom, but there's a reason. There's a big deal going on here in Lexington this weekend. Hi, Tom Browning.
Hello, gentlemen. How you doing?
We're good.
Well, thank you.
We're good. So there was yours the 12th perfect game?
Well, to be honest, at that time of mine, I was actually the 16th. And
see,
then they took some of them away.
Mm. Oh, okay.
They took Harvey. They took Harvey Haddix away. I think guy that Babe Ruth was pitching got thrown out after walking the first batter.
Yeah.
Somebody came in behind him and retired the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't count that as a perfect game.
Yeah. Well, they had that Dallas one, and you know, and then I eventually made my way back to number 12.
Okay. So. Well, that's where we'll go with you. And by the way, that Harvey Haddix one, I guess they took it away because he pitched 10 innings and didn't get a win in his?
12.
Yeah, 12. Unbelievable.
With no win.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, that's not a perfect. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's beyond. That's a little bit beyond.
That is beyond. Anyway, we should talk to people. This is the Reds Hall of Fame and Museum. It's going to be here. Whitaker Bank Ballpark this weekend. And this is fantastic. First of all, we saw a picture. There's the Reds Hall of Fame 1869 Red Stockings are going to take the field for a vintage baseball game against the Miami Nine. I mean, if we can't beat them, what are we even doing, Tom? Right?
Well, depends who those nine are they get from Miami. Then.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but it's a really cool game. You know, they tried to get me to play with them, but by then my knees were shot, and I just I didn't have any desire. So, but it's a really neat to watch and play. You know, no gloves. You know, the ball's bigger. You know, but it's really cool how we have evolved or where we evolved from. I remember reading about when it used to take nine balls to walk.
Gee.
And I said, and if it hit you, it only counted as a ball.
Oh, man.
So, guy, could you imagine the fights that would happen now?
Go back to there. Go back to those days. You'll see some offense change.
As you said, it's underhand pitching. It's no gloves. The way the game was in 1869. And then after the game, which is on Saturday, the team and the uniforms are so cool. They're going to go around the park and they take pictures with the fans on Saturday. And on Saturday, you and Ron Oster are going to be available to take pictures with the fans, sign autographs. This is a great deal here in Lexington. You know, the Legends have been a big part of this community for a long time, and we're the official station of the Reds here in Lexington.
Yeah, and you didn't mention
you are in Reds country.
Oh, yeah,
yes, sir.
If I may say so.
Yep.
I remember in the old days when we used to go on the van, when we just took one bus, we always, you know, Lexington was always a major stop, Louisville, you know, but Lexington, what was that, the White House, the cottage, what was the Campbell House?
The Campbell House. Yeah.
Right.
The Campbell House, yeah. I remember we used to go there.
They're doing them at the Red Mile now at the Trotter Track. That's where the Red Caravans are when they come
here. I think Lexington's awesome. And I live up here in Northern Kentucky, so I'm not very far away.
Yeah.
It's always cool. I always enjoy going down there.
Yeah, now I have my roots here. My grandparents lived here, and I used to come and stay with them. And I happen to be not like the other 150,000 people. I was at the Cincinnati Reds-Dodgers game on September 17th. 1988.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That was a little bit of a letdown after what happened on September 16th, which was when Tom threw his first game.
You were a day late, pal.
Yeah.
Actually, according to my wife, it was the better day because she got a full-length mink coat out of the
Well, I got to see a loss.
Yeah, she asked my wife to come to the game the next day, come to the pregame, and she had a little thing out on the field. You know, I thought she could give me a plaque or something. She ended up giving me a stemmed rose, but a nice one. And then she gave my wife this box, and she opened up the box, and it's a black full-length mink coat.
Oh, my Lord.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's...
Well, but, that's, you know, to be honest, Tom, your wife was the one that gave you the peace of mind to where you could go out and throw a perfect game. Yeah. I mean, right? Isn't that the way it works?
I try to keep telling myself that.
Yeah, okay.
That rose, though, that's something else.
Yeah. She was my best and worst critic.
Well, that's fair.
I mean, she would tell me, "Oh man, you weren't very good today. You really stunk," or you know, something like that. But yeah, she was my rock. I mean, hell, we have 5 kids, and they're all grown now, and did a nice job with that. But Marge wanted to put a clause in my contract the next year that if I threw another perfect game, that my wife would get a $300,000 bonus.
Oh, that would they'd have probably gone for that.
And Major League Baseball wouldn't let her do it. And I took a perfect game into the ninth inning in Philadelphia on the 4th of July.
And you didn't do it because she didn't give you the $300,000. I wouldn't have either, Tom.
Oh, well, I think she secretly would have given it to my wife.
Yeah.
You know, I think my wife secretly would not have told me anything anyway.
So. This is so great.
So, Tom, going into that second perfect game you had, were you more nervous for that one because you had done it before? And did anyone talk to you either the first or second game?
These guys, I think everybody on my team made a diving play.
Wow. You
know, snagged a ball out of the air. Lenny Dykstra hit a rocket up the middle. I went to get out of the way, and it hit my glove. I ended up catching it. Oh, my God, look at that. Yeah, I mean, I remember walking in after the seventh inning because Pete was the manager as well for that one. And I remember walking into the dugout, and he looked at me, and I said, "Don't say a thing, Skipper." And then the ninth inning, I hung a changeup, threw right down the middle to Dickie Thon. He hit a bullet to right center field for a double to break it up. But, you know, I didn't deserve it there. The first one I felt I deserved. The second one, nah, I would have been very lucky to get that one. But gee whiz, it would have been nice to have be the only guy to do two, I suppose.
Yeah. That would have been cool. But, you know, we've been looking at some of the stats and all the things. And with the way the game has changed now, you had a great career pitching. When you watch baseball now, what are your thoughts about it in terms of all the strikeouts, all the stats, all the spin rates, all the exit velocity, all the stuff we have going on, instead of just like sitting and watching the game? How do you feel about the way baseball has gone?
They have broken this game down with computer models and all sorts of statistics, you know, like you said, spin rate, launch angle, whatever. You know, but you can throw all that stuff into it, and you still have to go to the hitter to be the barometer. The hitter is going to tell you what kind of day you're having. You can be throwing 85 and getting people out. You can be throwing 98 and they just hit rockets all over the place.
Yeah,
you know. But to me, there isn't the and I don't want to say the art of pitching, but the ability to pitch to hitters accordingly according to your power. You know, for me, it was up and in, low and away. Those are my two spots that I had, you know, I practiced all the time.
Yeah.
Because that was where I got people out at, you know. And I don't see that as much. I see them throwing in areas. Because I like to pitch up in the zone, but I always try to get up and in. I tried to crowd him a little bit, unless he was a little guy. Then I left it out over there. They could hit as far as they want to maybe the warning track in right field. But,
yeah.
You know, now with the bats and balls, they can hit him in the seat. So it's a little bit different. But I still think, you know, they're into the power stuff. They like the strikeouts, you know, the walks, the home runs, you know, all those things that are shiny little things for baseball are really prevalent right now.
Yeah.
But you're going to see pitching come back because these guys, you know, they're getting through 100 pitches after 5 innings. And sometimes, you know, and maybe get to 6.
Yep.
But, you know, we were... You know, I had 82, 88, 100 pitch complete games.
Well, your perfect game was 102 pitches.
Yeah. I mean, they're just, I just think because they are spending less time over the plate, they're, trying to play on the edges too much, you know, and they're, you know, the hitters are, they know that that ball up in the zone gets, goes a long way. And even the ball down in the zone goes a long way. But just to get back to your first question is, it doesn't matter all that stuff. The hitter's going to tell you what kind of day you're having.
Yep.
You know, and if you've got a pitcher that's trained or prepared to go out there and lay it on the line and just pound that zone and hopefully make quality pitches when he needs to, or you want to get these guys that throw 100 miles an hour, 100 pitches through five innings and, you know, maybe walk four and strike out five, only give up two hits, but, you know, I just, to me, there isn't a fluidity to the game anymore. It's just, you know, one inning, just rear back, let it eat, and then the next inning, rear back, let it eat. Just set it into a groove. Although there are some pitchers out there that are still pitching.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Pitching inside, pitching away, changing speeds, that kind of thing, you know, and necessarily doing so. And I was one of those guys. I had to have command. I couldn't just rear back and see how hard I could throw it and if I hopefully throw a bias, because I very rarely did that, so.
So,
yeah, but the game is still the same. Good defense and pitching is going to win it.
So something that, I don't know, you're not specifically famous. After the perfect game, after the World Series, probably the thing that you are best remembered for, I'd say, is watching a little game from the rooftops at Wrigley Field.
Yeah. Those are my two career highlights right there. You got them both in.
Yeah, can you tell
show.
Us?
We got them both in one show.
Can you tell us a little bit about how that came about? I know it was, you got into a little crap for that, right?
Oh yeah, but it was great. You know, I was. How old was I then? I think 33, so I was prepared. I was mature enough to handle it, I think. So, but we were in Pittsburgh, and a buddy of mine, Bobby Walk, when he was in, they had just come back to Chicago, and the ground crew got him into the scoreboard to see what, you know, the scoreboard was all about in center field. He said it was awesome. So he said, "Hey, when you get in there, go talk to Terry. You know, he'll get you up there." So we get into Chicago, and that's the first thing I did is I. Went down the right field line, was back then, that's where the ground crew hung out, and Terry was there, and he saw me come, and he just started shaking his head. He said, "Do you want to get in the scoreboard, don't you?" I said, I do, and he said, "Well, I can't." He said, I got too much trouble for allowing Mr. Walk in there, and I said, "Okay, that's fine." So Timmy Belcher was on the team at the time, and we went out there for batting practice, and I'm just standing out in the outfield with Timmy, and I'm looking around, and I said, "You know what? Wouldn't it be kind of cool if I snuck over and sat on one of them rooftops, man? I could probably do that, couldn't I?" He said, "Yeah." So after batting practice, you know, we had like 45 minutes before the game. I walk upstairs, and the clubhouse manager, Tom Elman, I said, we called him Otis. I said, "Otis, you know anybody who owns any of them buildings across the street?" He goes, "Yeah, his name is, what did he say, Lucas, George Lucas. Not the George Lucas, but a George
different
Lucas.
One, yeah.
Yeah.
His story would have been awesome if it was the George.
I said, "Do you have his phone number?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, get him on the phone for me." So he got him on the phone. I said, "Hey, George." I said, "I'm Tom Browning with the Reds. I was hoping maybe I could sneak over and sit on one of your rooftops for maybe half an inning or so." He said, "That would be so cool. Why don't you meet me out in front of Murphy's Pub at the top of the third inning?" And I said, "Okay." I said, "I'll have a black sweatsuit on with a Reds hat on and red turf shoes." I said, "Okay." So I sat in the bullpen for two innings and just hung out there, and as soon as that last out was made in the bottom of the second, I stood up and I said, "All right, boys, look for me." They said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Don't worry, you'll find me." So I went upstairs and got the sweatshirt on, walked out to, you know, met the security guys, let them know I'd be right back, and I went across the street, met George, walked down, I don't know, two or three buildings. I don't remember how many buildings we walked down, but I do remember the building. We walk up, and at that time, those were all apartments. The rooftop was just for the games, but everything else was apartments. So we walked up the staircase and got all the way up the roof, and I got on that little. There was a landing right below me, so the white wall that I was sitting on wasn't on the edge where if I fell I was going to fall three stories. I would have fell about 4 feet, and there was an area there. So I got on there, and I just took my hat off, started waving my boys in the bullpen, and they saw me and waved back, and talked to a couple people while I was there.
Where do you hear this, Tom?
What's that?
Wait till you hear this in this age we live in.
Yeah, I just called up. I don't think Matthew had seen that before. I just called up the video and showed him. There's video of you hanging out on the rooftop, waving back and forth with. I couldn't tell who it was in the dugout, but somebody was very happily waving back at you.
Bobby Valentine was waving to me, and it pissed Davey Johnson off.
Yeah. Well, everything pissed Davey Johnson off.
Yeah, that's true. What a great story. That's awesome. Listen, Tom, thanks so much for jumping on with us. It's going to be great to see you out there this weekend. You are, as you know, beloved by Reds fans everywhere, especially here. And thanks for talking to us today. You're a great one, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I apologize for being late.
You're okay. You're good.
We got it done. So
yeah,
thank
we
you for
did.
Having me. And hey, will you guys be there this weekend at all?
I am going to try to make it out. I don't know for sure. I got to work the Belmont Stakes, so it depends on my timing. Okay. Yeah.
Well, if you get a chance, if you get there, whatever, make sure you say hello.
We will.
We'll do.
Promise.
All right.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, okay.
You got it. Thanks, man.
Tom Browning.
Awesome.
How cool is he?
Yeah. That video of him sitting on the roof. Just way, hey.
I'd never seen that before. That's it's awesome. A riot.
David Johnson was mad he got fined $1,000.
Oh.
And, you know, whatever he was making in 1993, that's probably a fair chunk.
Yeah, but still. Oh, please.
David Johnson.
They didn't want everybody doing it.
Right. Imagine they had TikTok back then.
Yeah, all right. Oh, my Lord. Unbelievable. All right, coming up, Caroline Dorney. This is ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5.
The Drive, brought to you by Dan Cummins and Bears in Georgetown.
That you're too much, and this is a good thing they can't touch.